Welcome to the Eat the Evidence podcast, a show for cake and cookie decorators and sugar artists of all kinds. I'm your host, Kimberly Chapman, and this is episode number 42 on May 23rd, 2019. On this episode, Thomas Blake Hogan talks about his incredible string of cake and cookie show wins, how he got started and hooked into sugar arts competitions in the first place, and his tips on how to succeed in that arena. So whether you were supposed to start your latest competition entry yesterday and you're procrastinating away, or if you're elbow deep into the hard work of it, or noping all over the entire idea of competing because you've got way too many client cakes to get out the door this week, let's get this show started to entertain and educate you on your sugar arts journey. Joining me now is cake artist Thomas Blake Hogan, multiple show prize winner, and most recently, best in show at SoFlo 2019. Welcome, Thomas.
Yay!
Yay!
Thank you, Kim. I'm so excited to be on this show. I listen to your episodes very often, so I'm excited to be on here.
That means the world to me. it's if people listen, it makes it worthwhile to do.
Yes.
But, okay, so let's not bury that lead, though, because SoFlo, best in show, that amazing car cookie.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, no, I was very shocked because, cookies, they don't normally win a best in show. So I was very happy to come away with that prize for sure.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Has a cookie ever won that before?
Well, actually, this was the first year that SoFlo even had a best in show award. Nick Lodge helped SoFlo expand some of their categories. So that this year they offered a gravity-defying cakes in motion category. And then they also expanded to have an Innovator Award and a Best in Show. So, yeah, that was the first year that they even had one. So I feel very honored to have been given it.
That's like bursting out of the gate. That's like extra, extra well done.
Yeah, I was not expecting it, not from a cookie. So I was very happy to have won.
Okay, well, then let's talk about the cookie and the process you did, because that was not a trivial cookie. We'll post pictures.
So every time I do a competition, I have this like Excel spreadsheet that's full of like something I'll see in life, and I'm like, ooh, that would be a good idea for a cake. I'm sure we all have those like little Rolodex of ideas that we hold on to. And so I had this idea to do sort of like a vintage convertible sort of thing, and I originally imagined it as sort of, you know, cookies. I tend to, you know, it's so easy to think two-dimensional. But then eventually I was like, well, why couldn't you make it in 3D? Their theme for the category was Key West. And I was like, oh, well, that kind of works for Key West because, you know, they're famous. Key West is famous for like that 7-mile bridge that connects all of the islands in the Florida Keys.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh, yeah, like doing a vintage convertible, that would be kind of cool. So yeah, so I set out on trying to figure out how I was going to achieve doing a three-dimensional car in cookies. And it was also sort of like a practice because later this summer in July, Julia Usher, the famed Julia Usher, mm-hmm. is sponsoring her cookie 3D cookie competition at the Show Me Sweet Show in St. Louis. And I was like, I know I definitely want to try to enter that. So I was kind of like using this show as sort of like a practice run to get my mind wrapped around working with three-dimensional cookies. So it was sort of very trial and error. I had to think of how was I going to make my templates all fit together. I was going to do a mixture of like flat pieces and contoured pieces. How was I going to coat them? So I decided I was going to coat them in royal icing. It seemed like, oh gosh, it would be easy if I coat it in fondant, but I feel like so many cookie purists out there really love it if you try to use icing more so than fondant. Like, they don't mind like fondant embellishments, but I find like the purists out there of the cookie people really love it if you stick with like the basics. And so I was, okay, I'm going to try and figure out how can I coat this 3D car in icing. And that was probably the most frustrating part of the whole process. So like the hood and the trunk of the car were my contoured pieces. I probably had to coat those at least 3 to 4 times because it was testing different icing consistencies. Sometimes it was too thin, sometimes it was too thick. And then like how I was actually coating them. So initially I tried sort of like enrobing them, just sort of like dumping the icing over the top. And then I tried like sort of quickly flooding them and trying to see if that would work. I had problems though, because when you put icing on really thick to a contoured cookie, what will end up happening is your top layer of icing will start to crust, but your bottom layer underneath is still pretty wet. And since you have a contoured cookie, it still wants to slide off, kind of. Yeah. So I had a big problem often with the top layer starting to crust, but the bottom layer wasn't set and it still wanted to droop off and start creating all these like cracks and stuff. It was a mess. So eventually what I did find was the best method was just kind of sticking to what Julia Usher does in a lot of her videos, where she sort of dips the whole cookie in and then caps off all the excess. And that really is the best way to kind of do it, because if you quickly coat the whole thing in one fell swoop, and then you're able to get as much of the excess icing off as possible, it thins out on those like curved corners.
Right.
And so then it doesn't get that problem where it starts to crust, because it's so much thinner on the curve, then it's the whole thing starts to set more evenly at that point. So that is what I really found to be the best method of coating. And then I also had to figure out, you know, there were some parts I was like, okay, once I assemble this, I can't coat the backside of this cookie, like the interiors, like the inside of the doors. I was like, how am I going to coat the inside? Because I have to assemble it first. And so then I was like, what if I did a royal icing transfer? So that's what the interior doors are actually a royal icing transfer that I glued up to the side.
That's really clever.
So then when I assembled all the pieces, I used sort of fondant strips to make all of my like silver chrome to sort of hide all the seams that were connecting all the joins of all the car pieces. So it worked out really well. I was very proud of my ingenuity, because it was all kind of stuff that I was just trying to do on the fly for the most part.
Right. Yeah. It really worked, like particularly like those interior doors. I'm looking at the picture right now and it looks seamless. Like if I didn't know anything about 3D cookies, I would have thought maybe you dip the whole thing. But I mean, I know what you mean, because I've done enough 3D cookies to know that like you get the thing where on a curved thing, the top is too thin and the bottom is too thick. I mean, I've done things where I've actually stood for 15 minutes rotating a piece, like stuck a toothpick in it and been slowly rotating to sort of even that drip bump that wants to form.
Right, yeah.
But yeah, it hits
you. Yeah, no, it was a lot of, like I said, a lot of trial and error, many times frustrated. I had to scrap and start over a few times.
Yep.
Yeah, no, it was just sort of a lot of engineering, but sort of like, I eventually got to be a point, I was like, I can't pre-plan this. I kind of just have to jump into the waters and see what happens and then sort of play as I go and fix the problems as they come along. One thing that the judges said that I got a lot of compliments from the judges, the tires, because it's fully supported on cookies. There is no other support in there.
That's
the
amazing.
Tires are full. The whole car has a chassis underneath. So my tires were actually made of one circle of cookie was the front tire that you fully see in the front. But then I had two half circle cookies that were glued together on the back. And then I put royal icing between all the seams, and then sanded it down so it was like a smooth surface. And then I dipped the whole tire in one cookie. But then since the back two cookies were half circles, they created like a little ledge that the whole chassis of the car could sit on.
Oh,
so then it was fully supported by the wheels. So yeah, that's one thing that the judges so that they were really impressed by were how I did the wheels. Because I included in-progress pictures, because I obviously, even though that wasn't a requirement, I knew that the judges would probably want to know how I did a lot of the things I did. But I forgot to include in-progress pictures of the tires. So I think that was all one thing that the judges were like, how did this work? And they really wanted to know. So that's what a lot of them asked about were the wheels after I won. So,
well, that's impressive engineering. Yeah, because I can see how, as you've described, I can see how that would work. But I kind of assumed at that level, particularly at winning a prize, I assumed it wasn't like that there was a giant hidden block cookie underneath. But yeah, that's a lot more stable than if you had just sort of mounted it on round wheels. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
And I mean, the details on it, the chrome accents and the itty bitty little handles and, yes, you know, the isomalt window. I guess the lights are isomalt too, are they?
Yes. Yeah. So like all glass elements, like the headlights and the taillights and the windshield were all isomalt. Yeah. Yes.
And then the hand-painted background. I mean, some people would have just entered the hand-painted background.
Well, hand-painting has always kind of been one of my strengths because I have a very artistic background. My whole family is artistic. So painting and drawing has been one of my staples that I tend to use. But I kind of didn't want to get stuck in thinking of everything and being so two-dimensional. But I still really wanted... I knew that was a strength of mine. So I tried to think of a way to incorporate a whole scene.
Right.
And that could still utilize my hand painting skills. So I thought, ooh, a billboard at the beach and the cars driving up on the beach. And I was like, this will be perfect for Key West. So yes, no, I was very glad of how that all turned out. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, it's such a cute background too, because it is that postcard style. And...
Yeah. I wanted like very vintage, 1950s. Postcard greetings from Key West.
Yes. I mean, well, and it ties all together. I mean, this is one of those things I've heard Nick Lodge talk about, you know, for years at Austin and elsewhere too, is, and it's an art thing that, you know, art people know, I think, and sometimes even just sort of on a gut level, is tying together the colors. I mean, just looking at the piece, the sky matches the car, matches your ribbon.
Mm-hmm.
And it brings,
yeah, no,
it brings the eye.
Coordination is, yeah, very, very important.
Yeah,
when it comes, because it really can. It can make a cohesive piece, or it can really be distracting if you pick the wrong colors.
Yeah, it's not even just the colors match. It is the top, it's the middle, and it's the bottom. Like if you'd made the car pink, that would have matched her swimsuit. But I don't think it would have. I mean, I possibly still could have won because of the amazing, you know, technical achievements of the Royal icing. Because, like, as you said, fondant would have been fine, but easier. Royal was harder and showed a lot more skill.
Yeah.
And the smoothness of your Royal is, like, amazing. But...
Yeah, that was the thing, too, is when I showed up, like, a lot of people kind of walked by the car as, like, oh, that's a nice car. But they didn't realize that it was in the cookie category. A lot of them, I think, thought it was just, like, a fondant-covered cake.
Yeah.
When they first walked by it.
It's kind of like, you know, in cake, we're, particularly with novelty cakes, we're used to the cake muggles out there saying, what? That's a cake? But in this case, because you've taken it to cookies, all the cake people are like, what? That's a cookie?
Right. Exactly.
This wasn't your first 3D cookie, was it?
No, it wasn't my first 3D cookie, but it was sort of my first, like, really technical 3D cookie.
Okay.
I've done a couple gingerbread houses before. My staple show that I always went to since I first initially got involved with Sugar Arts has been the Oklahoma State Sugar Arts Show.
Right.
And so I entered a couple gingerbread houses there, and then in 2017... I entered Julia Usher's cookie competition when she was still hosting it at the Oklahoma State Sugar Art Show. The theme that year was perfume, and I did a series of portraits of Hollywood starlets putting on makeup and perfume, and then I did a whole bunch of, I did three perfume bottles.
I remember that piece going around. I don't think I knew you then, but I remember that piece. I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that was me.
Go.
So and I was very... very grateful that I also won that competition. So I've been very fortunate. Actually, the past few years, I've actually been on a bit of a winning streak. So I don't enter competitions setting out just to win, but I my goal is always to just challenge myself.
Right.
My goal is to always enter something new and something better for me personally than what I did the last time. And, you know, if I get rewarded for that, great. If there's someone else there that I think did much better work and they win, it's perfectly fine. I feel validated no matter what, and So the goal for me is always just to try to beat myself, essentially. I'm not trying to beat anyone else.
That's the sensible, healthy-minded way to do that.
Yes, exactly. But I will say it's I've been very lucky.
Winning's nice. I mean, I'm not lying. Yeah, we all like to win, but I mean, yeah. I mean, I've gone into contests, you know, like, no, I really want to win this. And when I did, that worked. But yeah, if you're going in to win, you've already got this pressure on yourself that isn't healthy even as you're working.
Right.
Yeah.
Like when I first started doing cake shows, I would just kind of go in. I was in the lower levels, and I would just sort of go in, get my ribbons and sort of leave. I would mostly get third, seconds, and that, but it's just like as the years go on, you kind of learn how to make your work cleaner and how, you know, all the important things in a competition, like, you know, covering your boards, making sure it's on a food safe surface, and you know there's a ribbon around the board. You know, if you're piping, make sure you don't have any dots on your royal icing work. You know, just like the key things that a lot of rookies in cake competitions, you just kind of learn the more you do it. And so it took several years before I finally got the hang of being like, oh, okay, this is what judges are looked for in cake competitions. Like, this is what they're actually, like, judging you on.
Right.
And so though you keep those things in mind and you still make cakes that you really enjoy, because that's also the fun thing about competitions is, like, you're not hindered by what somebody else wants. Like,
or can't afford.
You don't have to do this cake because someone's paying you to do it.
Yeah.
You're doing this cake because I love this theme or I love this idea and I've always wanted to do it, and so I get to make a cake that I want to make. But at the same time, you keep all those things that the judges are looking for in your mind, and it helps you to grow, and your attention to detail and your aesthetic can start to improve each time you enter, and that only ends up helping you, I think, especially if you run a business. The more you enter competitions, the more you grow as an artist, which then only sets you apart and makes you more sought after from your clients, you know?
Yeah, it doesn't hurt as a business to be able to say even just the phrase award winning.
Exactly.
And if you can even, you know, bump that up to the next level and say grand prize winning or best in show winning or whatever. I mean, if it's not even about the wall of medals in terms of the business, it's being able to put on your social media, on your business card or whatever, award-winning cake artist or award-winning sugar artist, and you know, featured in media. It doesn't matter how many times you've been featured in media, just being able to say featured in media, then people think that that's impressive. You know, even if what you've won is very small, even if what you won was, you know, second place in, you know, adult intermediate, then, like, but if you won something, you can put that on, you legitimately, not lying, put that on your social media that you are now an award-winning cake decorator.
Exactly. Cake competitions are fun, too. Like, when I first got into cake shows, like I said, I was in sort of, like, the beginner, adult advanced. I was sort of, didn't really know too many people. Like, things didn't really kick into high gear for me until I was 2015 at Oklahoma State Sugar Art Show. I was sort of still in the adult advance. I'd been in the competition several years and I was getting better and better, but I wasn't, technically didn't meet the requirements of being a semi-pro, because I didn't take classes and I never owned a business. So I was just like, but you know, I want to continue to challenge myself, so I'm going to try, and I'm going to enter some of these open sponsored categories at the show. There were some categories that were sponsored by well-known sugar artists. One of them was a royal icing competition sponsored by Carrie Griffiths, and then a passillage competition sponsored by Don Parrott. Okay, I'm going to try and enter both of these because these are open divisions. That means anyone from beginner to master can enter this. And so I'm going to just, you know, challenge myself and see how it goes. And when I took that on, that mentality, I was like, okay, you're really going to try and up your game. You're going to try as be as detailed as you possibly can, because you're going to be competing against some tough challengers.
Mm-hmm.
So I challenged myself to enter both of those categories. And then I also did two other entries in the adult advance. Both of them got first place. I was very happy about that. And then I won both the Royal Icing competition and Don Parrott's competition. So then it was like, I went up to get my awards, my back-to-back awards, and then everyone was like, wait a minute, who is this person who's just showed up and, like, won all these things? So that was sort of, like, the first moment that I just couldn't, like, go in and be low-key. And people came up to me after, you know, like, wanted to, you know more about me and who I was. And then I was like, oh, you know, it's more than just, like, growing as an artist. Like, cake competitions are fun. Like, it's an opportunity for you to meet your fellow cakers and, you know, hang out and have a good time.
Yeah.
With all these people who are passionate about the same thing you're passionate about. Next year I went to Oklahoma. I actually had my first cake disaster though.
Oh, do tell.
Yes. So like I said, I don't make cakes for a living. I only do competition. So I have had the glory of not really working with real cake all that often, because oftentimes in competitions you can use cake dummies or styrofoam unless you're doing a sculpted cake. Most of the time, most competitions ask you, if you're doing a sculpted cake, to do it in real cake and to please include in progress pictures.
Right.
So I was like, okay, you know, we've never done it before. Let's give it a try. I had done a couple sculpted cakes when I was in the lower levels, but nothing that really required an internal support. So I was going to try to challenge myself to make a sculpted cake that actually had an internal support. So what I ended up making was a 3D sculpture of Jessica Rabbit from the movie Who Framed Roger Rabbit, one of my favorite movies of all time. And she had an internal structure of PVC pipe, and I just made a big old rookie mistake. So if you're making an internal structure, make sure you have a board that you properly secure it to.
Oh dear.
Because what I should have done is I should have had a wood board that had like a metal flange. And then I screw that into the board, and then I screw in my PVC pipe armature.
Mm-hmm.
But what I ended up doing is I had two cardboard cake drums. I stacked them on top of each other. I made a little hole in the center and wedged my PVC pipe in and put hot glue around, and then wrapped that in foil, and then started building the cake around the structure, which would have been fine if the cake was just going to sit there.
Yeah.
So I had worked on the cake for like 2 weeks leading up to the competition, and she was fine, but she had to survive a 4-hour trip to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And she's so, top heavy.
Yeah, when I got to the competition floor, opened up the box, and you know, just like a rabbit, she's a very top heavy girl.
Yeah, she is.
So she just fell right over. That PVC pipe ripped out of the boards.
Oh dear.
And just crushed all of the cake in the lower half of her body. And so I was just like panicked. I was just like, thank goodness I was there the night before, because sometimes when I go to Oklahoma, it's not that far of a drive for me since I live in Missouri. I sometimes would drive down the morning of and set everything up.
Right.
But so I was there the night before. And luckily, my mother was with me, my poor mother. We ran into a local hardware store, and I was just like frantic trying to find anything that could somehow make her stand upright again. And my poor mother is just holding Jessica Rabbit by the boobs, like in the car, trying to like, but like, it's covered in modeling chocolate, so her hands are starting to warm it up, and she's just, like, moving around, making sure she's not melting her. And I was just, like, it was a mess. And at that point, there really wasn't anything I could do. Like, I would have had to have bought so many materials and, like, deconstructed the whole thing. So, unfortunately, she did not make it to the competition floor.
Aww.
And it was very sad. I was very disheartened. I never had such a disaster like that before a competition. And I was just like so disheartened. And I was like ready to just like go. Even though I had like 3 other entries at the show, I was just like, I feel so defeated at this point. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't really want to be there. And then it ended up being like the best thing ever, because the 3 entries that I did have in the show all won first place.
Yay!
Yes, I mean, it couldn't have gone any better. So I re-entered Don Parrott's Postillage competition, and I ended up winning it again. And I made this a very elaborate Chinese dragon. It's on the banner of my Facebook page.
I love that picture.
Thank you. Yeah, no, that's one of my favorite pieces I've ever made. It was just, I spent a lot of time doing like all the scales on it. I think there had to have been over 1,000 individual scales that I hand cut
and
applied to that dragon. I rolled out each one and I had like a little tiny cutter that I had made out of a small like little petal cutter that I just like snipped and made into an even tighter teardrop shape, and then just cut all of the scales out one by one and then just put them on and then painted the whole thing. And I wanted it to have a lot of movement. So it was like in this like really curly Q sort of shape. I'm still very proud of that one.
Yeah.
And actually from a lot of the sugar artists that I really respected came up to me and, you know, so that was really great. And I was like, oh, thank you so much. So it's always good. So when you're there at a show and you have all these people that you respect and they're admiring your work as much as you're admiring theirs. And I love that aspect of cake shows, is you can just sort of really admire what everyone does here and what we all try to do at these cake shows.
Yeah. And then even if you don't place, because I mean, there are some shows where you're just always getting like Cake International, whatever. There's going to be like 200 people who are just amazing.
Exactly.
Yeah. But like
everything is beautiful there. Yeah. I mean, like, and you know, it's sometimes these competitions, there's a lot of amazing work and there's only 3 prizes to be given out. So,
right.
You know,
yeah. So,
but it doesn't diminish the amazing work that everybody puts into their thing.
Exactly. And having your friends around you to even like, if you didn't do as well as you wanted, having your friends say, but I loved it. You know, that especially when your friends are talented sugar artists, it's not just like your cake muggle friends who look at, you know, hand cut dragon scales. Cause boy, do I know that one from my last CI entry. Cause yeah,
right.
I cut thousands with a number 3 Wilton tip so much that I destroyed that tip. But like, so I mean, yeah, it's cause the cake muggle friends, they're always impressed with what we do, even on our down days. Right. Because that's not what they do. So, you know, when you have your sugar artist friends, particularly when they're amazing sugar artists all around you and they're saying, no, they loved it. Like, I mean, when at that last CI, I only got a bronze and I was a bit disappointed because I was kind of hoping for silver. But then I went out to the bar with Molly Robbins and Laura Mason, and they're looking at pictures on my phone going, it's so amazing. I'm like, okay, I feel better. Right?
Yeah.
Like, people of that caliber telling you your thing is good because they're your friends kind of just makes you go, yeah, you know what? I am. I'm good at this. And my friends are good at this. We're all good at this together.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's like, because we as cake people can see all the details. We can see the amount of work that's going into all these things. So that's what, it's nice to feel appreciated. And when you are putting that much effort into a labor of love, your peers can see that.
Yeah.
You know?
I can see that those are hand cut scales looking at this picture. Because even before I had done that myself, that's not a texture map. It's too irregular.
Yeah.
And, but I mean, I don't mean irregular in a bad way. I mean, like, naturally irregular. Like, it,
right.
You know, texture mats are great. If you need to do a client cake and get it out the door and someone's only paying you, you know, barely minimum wage, use a texture mat. But for competition, the more natural, you know, yeah, make every brick, yeah, make every tile, yeah, make every scale. I mean, man, what a difference it makes.
It really does. It makes it come to life so much more when you have that much hand detailing done in a competition cake. Yes, I definitely agree.
Yeah.
And then also at that show I made a holiday cake with a little sculpted piglet in an Easter basket that had bunny ears on. And I had a whole bunch of Easter eggs around it. And then I called it bacon and eggs. And I was really proud of it. It was very adorable. And a lot of people really got a kick out of it. And it ended up winning best of division and best of show for non-professional.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, for being such a terrible start to a show, it really couldn't have had a better finish. So, And then after, you know, at that show, that was sort of the first time that I really got to, they had like a cake function where I actually got to finally meet and have conversations with a lot of these established sugar artists. And I finally got to make, you know, get close friends. And up until that point, Oklahoma was pretty much the only thing I had ever entered, just because it was pretty much the closest show to my area. And because I work as a professional actor, so my primary career is a musical theater performer. I work in regional theaters across the country, and just recently came off of a performer contract with Disney Cruise Line for the last year and a half. So my job takes me all over the place. And so sometimes I have to go where the work is, and I have to put my passionate hobby on hold. And so I can't attend as many cake shows as I would like. So I kind of always just stayed at Oklahoma because it was the most convenient one for me to go to.
Right.
But then, you know, after getting to, you know, meet and talk with all these people and make more friends, I became good friends with Drew Padalecki, and he convinced me to branch out and try some other cake shows. So he actually convinced me the following year to try the SoFlo Cake and Candy Expo for the first time. So, and that was an adventure too, because I had never traveled to a cake competition that required flying before. Of course, like if you've ever traveled with a competition cake, it requires a very, very special means of packing and stress.
Yes.
So I made I think the theme that year was Mermaid Lagoon.
Right. I remember
and
that.
I specifically made a cake that was just going to fit the dimensions of carry-on size.
Yep.
Because I was like, I do not want to put anything in checked luggage. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is stressful enough. I want to know where it is at all times. So I made a pretty small little cake that was just exactly a carry-on size, and then brought it to the show and did pretty well. It was my first time entering semi-pro, and I got third place. And up until that point, that was actually, I think that might have been like the largest competition I had entered at that point, because a lot of the thing that was great about Oklahoma is it had so many categories that you could enter, but and so many divisions. So there was lots of opportunities to try a bunch of different things. But because there were so many categories, usually like the most in a single category would be like maybe 15 entries in one category.
Right.
And so I think at SoFlo, because they only had semi-pro and pro divisions, that was it. There was no amateur divisions. And I think they had three categories at that time. So I think there was at least maybe 25 to 30 entries at that point. So for me getting third place, I was like, oh yes, I will take that. That's great. I'm very happy.
Yeah, I mean, like the Cake International this past year, small decorative exhibit is one of the most popular categories, because you could just, it's just, you're making a thing. Like, it's a figure.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Well, and I think too, especially with Cake International, because there are so many international people, I think, you know, the decorative exhibits are probably like the easiest for people to travel with.
Right, exactly. And so I think I heard this last year, small deck, as they call it, I believe it was in the hundreds. I think it was 300 and something. In that one category, and no divisions. There's kids cakes, and there's a newbie thing, but those really are completely separate things. So in small deck, I think I heard something like there was 340 something or 350 something, like in that one category in M. So
I really, that's one of my goals. I really want to go to Cake International.
Yes, come play
soon. Well, I mean, because I've worked on a cruise ship, I know a lot. I have a lot of British friends, so I really do need to get out to England one of these days,
yes,
just so that I can see my friends and do CI. It would be awesome.
Right. And speaking of being on a cruise ship, your Austin piece is made on a cruise ship, which is insane.
So the story behind that was like I said, Oklahoma was kind of always the main show I could go to. I had heard about Austin and really wanted to go. And it actually wouldn't have been a problem for me to attend Austin. I actually even have relatives who live there, so it would be pretty easy for me to go. The problem that always gets in the way with Austin is it falls at a very terrible time of year, because as a musical theater performer, we have what's called audition season, which is where you are going to auditions in New York or for various theaters to hopefully get hired for the rest of the year so you can find work. So audition season hits in like, I think it hits usually hard right around mid-January and then doesn't stop until like the end of March. And February is like the heavy hitter month. That's when so many auditions are happening. So you really have to kind of be available for all those things. And since Austin always falls at the last weekend of February, it just never worked out for me to go. I was either always on a contract or I was auditioning for work. So I could never, ever attend Austin, even though I really wanted to.
Right.
So this year I was doing my contract with Disney Cruise Line and I negotiated to actually leave the ship so I could attend Oklahoma because I was hearing rumors that it's the 25th year. It's going to be a big deal. Some people were speculating that Cary Vincent might make it the last year. And I was like, well, okay, maybe I should just try to negotiate and see if they'll let me leave the ship so I can go do this show. Because it means so much to me. It's where I got my start doing competition cakes. So they were like, sure, I think we can work around it. We'll let you leave the ship. So I did. And then I started really looking into like the logistics of, okay, how am I going to get from a cruise ship to Tulsa, Oklahoma? And it would have just been a nightmare. I would have had to have like left the ship in St. Thomas in the Virgin Islands because we were doing Caribbean cruises. I would have had to left the ship in St. Thomas, fly to Tulsa, do the show over the weekend, leave and then fly to Cozumel, Mexico to rejoin the ship. Also while having, you know, like entries that I would be fine with. And also when I'm doing shows and doing rehearsals, where am I going to have the time to do entries? I was just like, you know, this is a bit much. And I think I'm just going to have to wait. And I'm like, I'm sure Cary Vincent wouldn't be subtle. She's not a very subtle woman. She would probably let people know if this was going to be the last year. Well, boy, did I guess wrong.
Yeah.
She was like, apparently at the end of the award ceremony, she's like, this is it. That was the last one. And I was just like, no! I was so disheartened. I was just like the worst feeling. And then I was like, well, well, I'm also missing Austin. And I was like, you know what? Darn it. We are going to figure out a way to get some peace to Austin. So what I ended up deciding I was going to do is I was going to work on a pretty small entry because working on a cruise ship, I have a very tiny cabin.
But I bet.
I have a very big luxury in that I did not have to share a cabin. A lot of people on cruise ships do have to share a cabin, but being a member of the main stage cast, I was lucky enough to have my own room. So I decided, okay, I was going to make a very small entry. And my parents were going to be coming to visit me in January. So I decided, okay, I'll make an entry and then I'll send it with them and they can go visit my relatives in Austin and then enter this piece on my behalf. So that's what I did. I decided to make a cupcake entry and my family recently had adopted a little kitty and this kitty was apparently very, very sweet. And I never got to meet this kitty, but before her untimely passing, she got hit by a car, unfortunately.
Oh,
it's very sad. So I decided I was going to do a little tribute to this cat that I never got to meet. So I did a modeling chocolate sculpture of the cat. And then I decided I was going to make a bunch of fondant yarn ball containers that would hold cupcakes. So what I did is I had, I got like a semi-sphere mold and then I coated that in the fondant. And then I extruded four colors of fondant in teeny tiny strings. And then I twisted each strand of yarn together and then folded them over one by one by one.
Oh my God.
To create an entire yarn ball, which was very time consuming. Actually, I initially started extruding the fondant, not even with a, a lever action extruder. I had like a manual one, like a manual polymer clay extruder where I was just like pressing down with my thumbs each string. By the end of the first, by the time I did one yarn ball, I was like, I can't do this anymore. No. My thumbs are numb. I was like, I got to figure out another way to do this. So I went to a local craft store and I bought a crank extruder.
Yeah.
And that made my life so much easier. I was like, I would have died trying to do five other yarn balls. I had to be a little sneaky while I was on the cruise ship because we had weekly cabin inspections. because when you're on a cruise ship, I get it. They don't, we're not allowed to have like perishable things. You can't like have milk or anything like that or fruits and vegetables in your cabin because, if things go bad, mold can spread in an instant on a contained vessel like that and a cruise ship. So I understand the need for that. But like sugar art, like fondant and, modeling chocolate, that's non-perishable technically. So I don't think I would have gotten in trouble, but I just kind of don't really want to, I didn't really want to know what would happen if security officers walked into my room and saw this like large display of
with
like
powdered sugar everywhere that totally would not look sugar like.
and all this sugar. And they're like, what is this guy doing? So every week I would work on it a little bit. And then I would just have to like pack it all away and then like hide it in my cabinets. And then, so when my parents came on board, I made this little box for it so that it had a snug fit. It had some spacers on it so that it could tip from side to side and the yarn balls wouldn't move. They were secured to the board as well. So
because that's scary.
So yeah, it got there. I was trusting them with it, but I was like, I'm not too worried at this point. It's out of my hands. It's literally in yours. As long as you don't like turn it upside down and shake it, I know it'll be fine. And my mom was like, she said she was like a nervous wreck. She was like carrying it like a baby the whole time.
I bet. Yeah. Because we're used to shipping our cakes and we're used to, like, I call it the shock absorber arms when I'm holding a cake in a car or whatever.
Yes,
like,
exactly.
I know how to.
You're just sort of like riding with it.
Right. Like, you get, that's a skill that we pick up. And someone who doesn't have that skill, I mean, I just had to take a cake to France and I got it almost all the way there. And then when we got to Airbnb, someone trying to be helpful tried to take the bag out of my hand and I felt it slip inside its carrier.
Oh, no.
And it was mostly okay. It was just like a little decorative thing I'd done, like, because the board wasn't a proper board because it was made for transport more than, like, it wasn't a competition cake, right? It was just, what happened was where it slipped inside that big IKEA cake carrier thing, the sort of the decorative bottom I'd done just kind of got a bit disrupted, but the main cake itself was fine. But I would never have grabbed it on an angle because, right?
Yeah.
Someone who was trying to be helpful reached forward and said, no, here, let me take that for you. And I was like, ah! And like, I felt it thunk inside that because, we know how to carry our cakes. And I mean, I've had a concierge try to help me at CI, and he was so insistent, and he took the box, and I'm like, no, don't touch it.
Anytime everyone's like, oh, they can see you're struggling, but like, I would rather be struggling with all these things in my hand than like pass off this thing, to someone else, because I know where all the trouble spots are.
Exactly.
And I know the proper way to hold it,
Yeah. But obviously it made it because it's gorgeous. I mean, I'm a knitter and that yarn looks familiar because I think I have that yarn. It looks like those colors.
I found that yarn in a craft store and I was like, ooh, this is really pretty. I don't know what I'll do with this, but I like this yarn. So I just took a picture of it and then, this cat idea will work for this yarn.
Yeah, I may have knitted one of my kids' sweater with that same yarn or at least very, very similar, that same the same colors forming that sort of diagonal, stripey sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's really pretty. And it totally looks like yarn. Like, if I didn't know, it looks like a kitty cat sitting in yarn. I mean, those whiskers. Come on, those whiskers. Those are amazing.
Well, the whiskers, I made those using, I had no idea what sugar thing was going to make it. I was like, I could try to make it out of royal icing, but those are going to shatter
those would have broken.
In 2 seconds. Okay. I was like, and so I knew that a lot of entries in years past at CI had used pasta mm-hmm. for their fur, which I have heard now that they don't allow, but whatever.
It's a favorite rant of mine. Well, because Don Butler won Best in Show with that Einstein head full of vermicelli hair, and Molly Robbins had that orangutan with a beautiful furry look, and then now they're saying, no, you can't do it anymore. I'm like, but clearly it was amazing.
Yeah, I see its point in some cases. I personally have a problem when people use corn silk.
Right.
Just because I don't think corn silk is... You would never eat corn silk.
You wouldn't eat corn silk, but people eat pasta. I'll eat raw pasta. So, like...
And I think pasta is okay. I think it's just, like, when you cover the whole thing.
Yeah.
I can see where that can be problematic because, well, that's not really sugar, and the whole point is that it's a sugar art show.
Yeah, I get that part of it, but to ban it blanket...
Like, I really don't see the problem. You're wanting to use something edible to achieve a technique that's not achievable in sugar because there's just nothing that's, you know, strong enough to do that. So if you use a little bit, like, I don't see a problem with that. So, but there was no rule about pasta, luckily, in Austin's rules.
And there won't be.
So I used, so I used Asian rice noodles for the little whiskers.
And
everything got there safely. Not a whisker was broken. I was very happy. And then it won first place. I won first place in Austin. I wasn't even there. It's a challenge being on a moving vessel in the middle of the Caribbean Sea, but I made it work.
Well, obviously, because you won.
Well, I'm actually really excited, and I really hope I can go to Austin next year. I am loving that mythology theme.
Right, that's clearly so popular, yeah. And, I mean, I was seeing people post about that. I mean, Jesse Lesser was just posting, what's your favorite mythical creature? And all these people are like, you mean for Austin, right? And she's like, no. And everyone's like, yeah, you do. And she's like, well, not much. No, that's not what I mean. But yeah, that's a great category. I can't. Oh, I really want to go.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not this time. Could.
But I understand. I personally understand the reasons why. And I applaud behind it.
Yeah. Well, so 2021 would be the earliest. And even then, we'll see. But and also having the thought lately of because my kid has been doing these youth climate strikes, and I'm like, can I fly still for CAKE? Like, is that legit? Like, do I have to be the good leader in this and say? But then I don't want to do that, right? Because I don't want people to stop going to CAKE shows. So it's that's really hard. And people are like, but it's your career. And I'm like, yeah, but I don't make money at it. Like, so I'm weighing that right now a lot. And whereas, like, I can hop on the Eurostar to CAKE and Bake Germany, right? I drive my Prius for an hour and a half to CAKE International. I don't even fill up the car. So I feel environmentally totally fine. You know, that's legit to go to CAKE International for me. But so,
CAKE and Bake Germany seems like it's a pretty interesting show. That just recently happened.
Yeah, it was just a couple weeks ago, and I'd heard about people enjoying it in previous years. And I actually thought about going this year, but I'd already committed to this Avignon trip with some friends. But I'm thinking it might have to be a thing for me next year. And not competing. I'm still giving myself the permission to not compete for a couple years because it had got to the point where it wasn't being fun when I was obsessing too much. I was enjoying the process of making my peace, but I was overstressing myself at the wrong times, and it was starting to cost things I wanted to do otherwise. I mean, just like even the podcast taking off, and like when I realized, if I don't do CAKE International as a competition, I can make jack-o'-lanterns with my kids.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, that's a big deal, right? Like, so, because we haven't made people don't care about the jack-o'-lanterns here, but I like doing them. I like doing the 3D ones. I got that, his name just flew out of my head, Ray Villafane.
He's famous jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah, he was doing some of those CAKE, the Food Network competitions and stuff. And so I bought his DVD.
Like Halloween Wars and stuff?
Yeah. Well, I think it was even before Halloween Wars, but, or maybe the early ones, because I haven't seen a lot of the recent ones because I live here now. But yeah, he was doing, he does these, like the 3D ones. And so I bought his DVD and it's really good because it talks about how to pick the right pumpkin. So you're, because you're carving into the sides a lot to get that depth in your relief.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I want to do another one of those. Do you know what I mean? I want to do that this October. So giving myself off at least a couple years, I'm kind of going to force myself to, I want, when I come back to it, I want it to be because I'm desperate to come back to it, not because I feel like I need to.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely understand that. I mean, it's getting to the point now too, where all of my free time is starting to be devoted to working on cake shows. And it's becoming harder and harder, like, because, you know, like I said, each time I enter, I try to beat myself. So, you know, when I first started getting into cake shows, I was like, I could enter six categories because the work I was doing wasn't really that advanced or that detailed. But now my skill level has risen so high that I have to do all these details and I have to do everything just right. And so now I can only eke out one entry per show, and so it's, but then I'm going to more shows than I ever have before as well, so it's like all my free time just gets kind of devoted to working on cakes. So I am not quite burnt out yet. I still have a couple goals that I'm working towards, but yeah, I can definitely see how that can happen.
Yeah,
right now I'm actually trying to get started on my competition piece for the Show Me Sweet show in St. Louis this summer in mid-July. I should have got started on it yesterday. they are really going all out there, though, because they are making it a big deal, particularly with the cookie competition. It seems like Julia Usher is really trying to get the word out. And I just saw that the prize package has like risen to $9,000.
Oh, my God.
For cookies. It's like amazing. And of course, she's got the television network that's going to be doing a documentary there as well. So they're really going all out to try and make it a big thing. And so I really hope it goes well. I attended the first Show Me Sweets show in 2017. And it was a pretty small show at the time. It was only a one-day show. But it seemed like it had a pretty successful first year. And actually, that show almost killed me.
Oh, no.
because the problem was, is it where it fell in the year? It fell like 2 weeks after Oklahoma, and in 2017 in Oklahoma, that was a big year as well. I was another very lucky year because I moved up to the semi-pro division at Oklahoma, and I decided, okay, you know, you're moving up to semi-pro, be prepared, you know, you gotta, you know, step up your game even more, because at the show with the divisional competition, especially with Oklahoma, professional and master, there really aren't as many people competing in the divisional levels in professional and master, because most of those cake artists are competing in the Grand National Wedding Cake Show.
Right.
So semi-pro tended to be the largest division, just in terms of number of entries, and, you know, people in semi-pro can be just as good at people at the master level. So I was like, you're really going to have to, you know, try the best you can and, you know, accept that, you know, you won't probably win, but that's okay.
Yeah.
You know? And so I decided I was still going to challenge myself. So I decided I was going to enter a wedding cake for the first time. I am not a wedding cake person. I don't really, to be perfectly honest, I find them a little bit boring because I'm not someone who enjoys doing flowers or piping necessarily. But I knew that these were things that I needed to work on personally. So I decided I was going to try. So I made a Santorini themed wedding cake, Santorini Greece. So I tried my hand at string work for the first time.
Oh my God.
And bridgeless string work at that. So it was challenging. But thank goodness for Dawn Parrott's royal icing I had bought some the previous year, and I was like, I bet I'm going to need this. And I sure did. It made it a whole lot easier to pipe string work with that. And then I tried my hand at making my first set of gum paste flowers. But I still wanted to, you know, rely on the techniques that I felt confident in. So I had a painted landscape of Santorini Greece. And I also did some modeling of a lot of the little, you know, the buildings in the white and blue buildings and churches in Santorini. And so I was very proud of it. And then I entered a couple other divisional ones. And then, of course, I entered Julia Usher's spooky competition with the perfume theme. And I did the portraits of Hollywood starlets and the 3D perfume bottles. And I won every category.
Oh my God.
I was stunned beyond belief. I was just like, what? What? I almost fell on the floor. I was just like, what is happening right now? I was like ready to be like knocked down a peg, and then I got first place in everything.
That's amazing.
and not only that, the wedding cake got best of division and best of show for non-professional for the second year in a row. I was just like, what is happening? this is crazy. I had to throw away the wedding cake because there wasn't room for it in the car. Like I like to save my sugar art pieces for a little bit, but I had so many prizes that I was just like, I have to get rid of some of the cakes because they don't fit in the car anymore. Right. It was crazy.
Well, I just found it on your page, and it's gorgeous. I mean, I love the blue. I love the swirls at the bottom. And yeah, the painting and that top building is just, I mean, it's cute, but it's beautiful. It's amazing.
Like I said, it's not something, it's a little bit out of my comfort zone because I like bold colors and I like fun themes. So I think that's why I felt like I really had to sort of give myself a themed wedding,
right,
in order to make it interesting for me to make a wedding cake, because there are people who specialize in wedding cakes and they are just so amazing at what they do. And that was a tough, there were some beautiful cakes that year. And so I was truly shocked and very honored that the judges liked my cake to give it first place, because I could have picked any one of those cakes, any single one of them in that category, and they would have, if they won, I would be like, oh sure, definitely, I understand, right, why.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, it never feels bad to, I don't want to say the word lose, but it never feels bad to not win when you see something else that's amazing. Like I've never looked at something that quote-unquote beat me and thought, oh well, how come they got it, because you can see when it's amazing.
Yes, I agree, though it is a subjective thing always. But, you know, sometimes you're like, well, I don't quite see it, but maybe the judges are seeing something that I don't. And they, but then, you know, you see what they, when you get scorecards too, which I like, at SoFlo, they give you like a scorecard and they'll like list out everything. They do that at Austin too, I think. I think my parents.
Yeah. Yeah. There's I mean, it's not saying specifically you got a point for this or that, but it's saying, you know, you got 8 out of 10 for creativity and 9 out of 10 for precision or whatever. I can't.
Things like use of color and, you know, difficulty of techniques and number of techniques and things like that. So you can see kind of like, okay, so this is how they've interpreted my piece. So you can, so even sometimes when subjectively you're like, well, I don't like that piece as much, but then at the same time, when the judges are judging based on those factors, you can see how those pieces won first place. And you're like, okay.
Yeah.
You know, like that's the thing about judging is, yes, it is subjective to a point, but they try to make it as objective as they possibly can.
Yeah. I mean, still, but each individual judge likes what they like. And if, you know, and that, well, that's why there should be more than one judge per piece.
Yes.
Anywhere where you only have one judge, now you have a problem, because if that judge doesn't like the color blue, right, then right, your beautiful blue grease theme thing is just, they're gonna say, ah, I don't like that on a wedding cake, but like that. So that's why multiple judges, that should get over that problem. Giving the scores, and Cake International just started using the scores too, and some people hate it, and most people I think were pretty happy with it. But yeah, because it does, it tells you. Now, I mean, sometimes you still get that sheet and you're like, how come I only got that much for this part? Or, whoa, they didn't notice the such and such because they gave me 9 out of 10 on this other part. Like, so it still can be confounding, but at least it's more information than just...
You know all the multiple factors that go into creating your score and the rankings that they give you.
Yeah, it makes it make more sense.
Yeah, so I was very shocked by how successful I was that year at Oklahoma. So the St. Louis show, its first year, it was only 2 weeks after Oklahoma. And so I didn't I didn't have my piece started at that point. So I decided, well, okay, you're going to make another wedding cake. You were successful the first time because apparently now I make wedding cakes. So, which was a huge mistake on my part because I was just like, I think I put it together in like 10 days. And I think I almost died at one point in the middle of it because I was just so tired because I just bit off more than I could chew in the time I allowed myself. I think I was up for 72 hours straight leading up to the show. And I drove from Kansas City to St. Louis to get to the show. I should not have been on the road. It was dangerous for me to be on the road. But I got there, I set everything up, and I like immediately passed out. So I didn't really get to enjoy, and since it was only like a one-day show, I really didn't get to enjoy it that show as much as I would have liked to. And then I got the ultimate shock. I won first place.
I'm looking at that one too. This is the autumn themed one.
Yes, the autumn.
It's gorgeous, and I love sunflowers. So it's like it's adorable and cute, and
it's one of those. It's a theme that I had in my Rolodex of ideas and my spreadsheet. I was like, oh, I've always wanted to do this. Oh, you know, they're doing a beauty of fall theme. That works perfectly. And so like, I would say, you know, if you like to do competitions, you know, make sure you keep a list handy of just things that you love or things that you see that inspire you. Because when these shows come out with their themes, there's so many things that I'm like, oh, great. I don't have to think about this.
Yeah.
I can grab an idea that I've always wanted to do that works with this, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I've got a file, goes back like a decade now at least, but a file on my computer called Cake Stuff.
Right.
And like if I see a dress that was like, oh my God, I love that dress, you know, copy and save the picture and it goes into that. I mean, these days that's what you would do with Pinterest. Right?
Yes.
You'd make a pin board of your...
I'm not quite as cool to have... I don't have Pinterest.
I don't really have Pinterest either. I am partly... Okay, here's why I don't have Pinterest. I haven't checked this recently, but a couple years ago, this was at least the case last time I checked. Their terms of service said that when you upload photos, you have the rights to those photos, and you are granting them in perpetuity rights to use those photos, even if you delete your account. Which means... Now, it was one of those rights things where you weren't giving them exclusive rights. So it didn't mean like you couldn't then go print a book, but it was meaning that they could print a book or whatever. And I had a big problem with that. And also, nobody shares their own things on Pinterest. The whole point is you're pinning other things. So it was really disingenuous.
I have trouble navigating Pinterest too, because oftentimes I want to see the pictures and I want to see the website that the picture came from.
And it won't list it.
And then a lot of times the links don't link. Send you there anyway. So I'm just like, so no, I do kind of what you do. I have like, I call it my cake inspiration folder.
Yeah.
Where I just see like, oh, I like this, and I'll like save the web page or I'll save the picture and then put it in a file folder.
Yeah. I mean, I have a Pinterest account, but I have it under the name of one of the characters from one of my novels. So it's just like, so I have not, as me, agreed to the terms of service. And I don't put my own stuff on it. It's just, but it's really weird because I picked a character who is like, just like a raging, angry, you know, young feminist woman and really wants nothing to do with cake. Like, but her name is on this pin board of like weird cake ideas. And I'm like, you know, if she was real, she'd be seething. But yeah, even still, honestly, mostly if I see something, I just save it to that folder.
Mm-hmm.
It's just faster. It's just how I work.
I just find it easier for me.
Yeah. And then also, I mean, because to some extent, if you have a pin board, a public pin board full of your inspiration stuff and you're working on something and now you fill it, like if you're working on a top secret piece for a competition and you suddenly fill it with a bunch of blue dresses and then you produce a blue dress cake, that's kind of skirting that edge of, you know, keeping your anonymity before a show with your entry.
Yeah.
Yeah. So people should be careful about that. But yeah.
It's time for a podcast helpful reminder. Are you working on a competition piece? Are you working on a client cake? When was the last time you checked the rules for your competition entry? When was the last time you read your client contract to make sure that you're spelling that name right? You're working really hard, I know, but every once in a while, you need to pause, go check that you're doing it right. because you're an amazing artist, but we all make mistakes. So right now, if you can pause, go check what you need to do, make sure it fits in the space that it needs to go into, make sure everything's spelled right, and then get back to work, because you're awesome.
Going back to the wedding cake things, for a guy who doesn't do wedding cake, you seem to be doing a handstand on one.
Oh. Yeah. So apart from, you know, being a singer and a dancer and a cake artist, I'm also a gymnast and acrobat. So
clearly.
So that's actually what was my first passion when I was a child. I taught myself to do gymnastics and tumble. And then I sort of fell into the performing art. Visual arts, like I said, has always sort of been in my background, because my sister was a visual arts major in college, and she was a big inspiration for me to do art. I actually initially went to college to be a visual arts major before I decided to switch into doing musical theater. And then baking was always something I did too, because my mother is a retired family and consumer science teacher. Home economics, if you're from that generation.
Right, okay, yeah. Uh-huh.
So I always loved, she always loved to like bake, make cookies, and so I always loved baking with her. And so it was just sort of like the perfect hybrid. And then I did gymnastics. That was my other passion as well. And so that sort of translated into me becoming a performer eventually. But yes, that picture where I'm doing a handstand on a cake, I don't want to disappoint anyone, but I wasn't really doing it on a cake.
I was a little suspicious because I thought that would have to have a fairly significant steel frame to take not right. just your body weight, but the physics of you doing a tumble onto it.
Right.
Yeah.
I did my own makeshift green screen, essentially. So I took a picture of myself doing the one-arm handstand. I think I was doing it actually on a fondant bucket. So something that had a lot of weight and that wouldn't shift on me. And then I took a picture of the wedding cake that I had made underneath it and then sort of spliced the two together.
Right.
It's just something a little fun, little.
Oh, it's a great picture. Yeah.
When I go to cake shows and things like that.
Well, and then you get known for the flipping, because that's how I first became aware of you, was Mary Carmen's video of you in San Antonio doing backflips.
Oh, right. Yes. Well, because, and actually when I won at SoFlo, they were, the crowd started chanting, flip, flip, flip. And I was just like, oh boy, I am not warmed up right now. Okay, let's try this. It was not a very pretty one.
It's better than anyone else could do.
But yeah, when I was in San Antonio, I went down for their show as well. Oh, and actually, so I, Jessica Rabbit, the cake that fell apart, I actually had a redemption with her. So I went down for the San Antonio show and I decided, okay, their theme was pretty in pinks. So I was like, okay, I'm going to remake Jessica Rabbit in a beautiful pink dress. So,
right, and I can see those photos now too. Yeah. And then, yeah. Clearly she's intact.
She made it that time. Yes. Luckily I did it the proper way, got my metal flange, a wooden board. She screwed in, but that was the first time I'd ever flown with a cake that was too large to be a carry-on, where I had to check it. And that was an ordeal. Cause I was like, oh boy, I really don't know. I mean, I looked at every tutorial I could find on how people traveled with their cakes for competitions. So I did everything I could. So she could technically flip upside down and she would have still been fine. But, you know, it was still like scary to like pass her off to, to the luggage people. And actually they were scared, but I flew Southwest and the woman at the Kansas City airport was so sweet, but it was a big ordeal because I pass it off to them. They're like, okay, we'll take it, I guess. And then I go through the TSA security. I am like literally just get through. And then they call my name over the announcements to please come back to the front desk.
Uh-oh.
So I literally have to leave the secure area. Like my shoes aren't even on. I'm carrying everything. I'm running up to the front desk because like my flight's going to start boarding soon. And the woman there is just like, we don't want to be responsible if anything bad happens. Would you be willing to buy an extra ticket so that this can just come on the plane with you? And I was like, I can't afford it. You know, I'm a starving artist. You know, I can't, you know, just, I packed it as well as I could. You know, I trust you. Just, you know, be careful. Just don't throw it around.
Right.
And they were like, okay, we'll try. And they were so sweet. They really did go the extra mile. It was like the last thing to get onto the plane. It was the first one to come off. It was waiting for me at the airport. They couldn't have been better about it. So she actually had no damage whatsoever. It was great. So she made it just fine. And then I also entered a cookie. I did a sort of a dimensional flat cookie of a Chinese woman holding a lantern over a cherry blossom tree.
Right.
And so both of those entries ended up winning first place, and I got best of show for the cookie.
Right, and this is how I saw the cookie before I even knew who you were, because I remember, I'm looking at your photos right now, and I saw this cookie, then I learned who you were because Mary Carmen posted a live video of you flipping.
Once again, like after the award ceremony, they were like, do some flips. So I was like, okay, I'll do some flips. And so then Mary Carmen just like all of a sudden has like this live video on me, and they're just like, do more.
I was like, who is this guy? he's very athletic for a cake decorator, because most of us are not.
I mean, I don't know how many more years I'll be able to keep doing that, but for the moment, it's my logo. And actually, I've gotten a couple t-shirts made that have my the logo of me doing the handstand on the cake, which I love them.
Yeah, well, I can see it as your watermark, and it's really effective, because particularly once you've seen your avatar pic there, you know exactly what the sort of silhouette watermark is, and it's really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, well, this will be something that will, I was like, I don't know any other cake decorator who does this, so I think this will be something that sort of will set me apart when, you know, if, you know, my pictures are shared, people will be like, well, wait, what is this watermark? I need to see more of this guy, you know?
Yeah, and that's so important, as, I mean, several people on the podcast have ranted. I mean, do you know Heather Sherman?
I don't think I have met Heather Sherman.
Okay, because you've seen her cakes, because one of the most ripped off cake pictures in, like, perpetuity on the internet is her rainbow pegacorn.
Okay.
To the point that she even gets people coming and saying, can you make something like this? And it's her own cake. And so she will be the first to rant about why you should watermark your pictures, because that was before she even thought about doing that. It's in, like, if there's a listicle of fancy cakes, if there's a meme about, you know, fancy cakes or cakes gone too far or any of that nonsense, right? It's that rainbow pegacorn. It's her cake. I've seen it so often. It's taken on its own life without her name on it. So kind of only cake decorators know. Yet we're all like, yeah, that's Heather's cake. We know who made that cake. Stop ripping off that cake.
Oh, yes. Okay. I just looked it up. I was like, yes, I have definitely seen this, this cake being shared around, and I never knew who made it.
Yeah, it's Heather's cake. So she talks about now watermark your images, and particularly in a way that can't just be chopped off at the top or the bottom.
Right. Yeah, you kind of have to layer it over it. Part of the cake.
Yeah, which you've done on your photos. In fact, one of those, I'm just looking right now at Jessica Rabbit, it's like right over her boob.
Right.
So no one can cut that out.
Her boobs are kind of unavoidable. So well, that's,
don't get mad, she's just sculpted that way, right?
Right. Actually, that's the title of the piece was, I'm not bad, I'm just caked that way.
That's right, well, there you go. Exactly, yes. But okay, so there you are doing gymnastics and performing arts. What makes you go, I'm gonna try sugar? How did you make that literal leap, probably, in your case?
Yeah. It was in high school. So I was still a teenager, and I was watching the Food Network one day. And this was before Food Network Challenge or Ace of Cakes or Cake Boss or any of that. They showed this special on the Food Network called Here Comes the Cake. You can actually still find it online. I just found it recently the other day. And it was covering the Tulsa show. I think it was like 2003 Tulsa show. I was just like blown away.
I think I've seen that.
So I grabbed a VHS. Remember those?
Uh-huh. I still have some.
So I recorded it off of television. Uh-huh. And I just like wore that tape out. I was just like, I am just amazed by what these people are doing. And I was like, because, you know, I had loved doing artwork and I had loved baking up to that point, but I never really knew that you could do cake decorating could go that far. Because up until that point, you know, it was just like for your birthday, you would get like a sheet cake from your grocery store that's just covered in frosting and has like a little border and some roses. Like that was cake decorating. I had no idea what it could be. So I was just like amazed. And I was like, these people aren't, you know, they're not in fancy chef's jackets and hats, you know, like they're just normal people who are going to the show and making amazing things. And I was just like, I want to do this so badly. So I convinced my family. I was like, because I wore that tape out. They were probably annoyed with watching it. They had probably watched it.
He's watching that show again.
But they were like, sure, you know, because being in Missouri, Tulsa is in Oklahoma, which is just the next state over. So like, yeah, that's not too bad of a trip for us. We'll do that. So that was all I needed. I was ready to just dive in, but I had no clue where to even get started. Like, I didn't even know where you found fondant. In the special, one thing I love is that they call rolled fondant royal fondant, because they misquote Carrie Vincent because they can't understand her accent.
Oh my God.
So it's like, I'll try to do my best Carrie Vincent impression. She goes, in the past, we looked as cake, as it's cake, it's just cake. But now we're seeing how far can you push the envelope with rolled fondant and gum paste. She says rolled fondant as rolled fondant. Right. And they kind of interpreted that as royal icing, right. Royal fondant. So for the whole special, they referred to rolled fondant as royal fondant.
Oh my God.
And I was like, I don't know where you find this stuff. I guess I'll go to this local cake store and I'm looking for royal fondant. Oh. I didn't know where I was going to find it. Because I was like, I don't really want to make it from scratch, but maybe there's like, this cake store will have like a mix where you just like add water and you get fondant. So I asked them, do you have fondant mix? And they take me over to this little section of the store. They give me this bag that says dry fondant mix. So I'm like, oh, this is great. This is, I think this is exactly what I need. So then I get home and then I look, read the directions and it's like, add butter, add your flavorings, cook it on the stove. And what? I'm like, wait, I mean, they didn't really do a good job explaining what fondant was, but they didn't really describe it as this. But I'm like, well, okay, I guess I'll follow the directions. Turns out what I actually got was like fondant candies, like, you know, like...
Oh, like British fondant chocolate. Fancies. Yeah, it's like a creamy filling.
Yeah, because, you know, like in Europe, you know... for like their pettifors, they'll coat them in, you know, fondant, you know, like,
yes, and that's different than sugar paste.
Rolled fondant they call sugar paste.
That's
so like
right.
There was, so it was this, I was like, but I even like, I made it, I even tried to like model with it initially,
and
like,
no,
it just like all melts into itself, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think this is what I think it is. so I ended up eventually finding a pastry book in my local library, I think by Jacques Perez, that had a recipe for rolled fondant in it. And so I made homemade fondant. It wasn't like marshmallow fondant. It was like old school fondant. This stuff had like no stretch to it whatsoever.
Right.
I really do not know how I covered a dummy for my first time. but somehow I managed to do it. And then, so I made a St. Patrick's Day themed cake, was my first cake that I made. And so I made, I covered this like four leaf clover shaped cake dummy. And then I put these little, a figurine of a leprechaun and a pot of gold. But the fondant I had made wasn't really good for modeling. I was like, I need something that's going to set up firmer than this. And the thing was, is like I said, I didn't know what I was doing. Cake hadn't exploded in the U.S. Like, yeah. You know, cake decorating supplies were not easily found.
No.
So I kind of just was limited to what I could make at home. So I eventually found a recipe for pastillage. And I was like, oh, this is a simple enough recipe. It's just mainly water, gelatin, and powdered sugar. And this stuff dries really hard. I guess this is what I'll use to model figures. Pastillage is not really something you traditionally model with.
No.
Just because it gets so rock hard and it crusts so easily. So it's very difficult to like to do that with. But that's what I used. Those were the first things I learned to model with was pastillage. I just was really fast before.
Wow, yeah.
Why, like, I think I won Don's pastillage category because I was using pastillage in a non-traditional way from the very beginning.
Right.
So I think that's what kind of set me apart in that pastillage competition.
Yeah, but, because what we start with shapes us as art. I mean, because I first started cake decorating in Nevada.
So
I was doing
like
my own.
You never use pastillage there.
Oh hell no! I mean, I was doing my own homemade fondant, and at first having to go out and buy because no one's paying me to do this, and I was on my husband's professor salary. We didn't have tons of money, so even like a Wilton pot of glucose was expensive. So like it was a major liberating thing when I went to my first Icy show and got a recipe that used cheap corn syrup instead. But then I was making my own fondant. Like, store-bought fondant wasn't a thing here. I haven't made fondant here once. Are you kidding? You sugar paste. You just go down to the grocery store and you buy it. I can buy a kilo of inexpensive sugar paste here for, like, a quarter of the cost of a cheap brand in the U.S. Like, it's just easy here. But yeah, there, I was making it all myself. So it was the kind that set up rock hard. And so I became a modeler of figures because that was a thing I could do. I think if I'd started out with something like marshmallow fondant or something, I'd be doing different stuff. Or like pastillage there's just no way I could do pastillage in the desert. It'd be dry in 5 minutes.
Yeah, no, Missouri, we have a bit of humidity in Missouri. So, but I mean, yeah, it wasn't easy to work with at all, by all means. And so I did my whole first cake that way. And then I had time to make another cake and I eventually found that, your local craft store, like Michael's, has a cake decorating section and Wilton makes fondant. I was like, all this time, it's sold already made? This would have been so much easier. I was like,
well, I remember that being new, too.
And then when I used it, I was like, oh my gosh, this stuff has so much stretch. This is so much easier to cover a cake dummy with.
Yeah.
But I mean, it didn't taste great, but I was like, it was at least easy. It was so much easier to work with. It was like, oh my gosh, this is like a game changer.
Yeah. The first time I tried satin ice, I was like, oh, this is heaven. Oh my God.
things you don't know. And then I go to the Tulsa show for the first time. And I actually showed up to the Tulsa show on crutches because I had my first, I've had two ACL reconstructions in my knee.
Oh my God.
Due to all my fancy acrobatics.
Right.
So I showed up to my first cake show on crutches and I was in the teen division and I was just like, oh my gosh, I'm seeing all these amazing cakes in person. And there's all the people that I just saw on the special. And I ended up getting a first and a second in the teen division. And I was just like, I'm hooked. This is so much fun. I love this. And like the next year I came back, I made like 6 entries.
Right. Yes. Did make it to Oklahoma, but that's because partly, the Austin show took over my life and everything was about the Austin show all the time. And I kept thinking, one of these years I'll get to Oklahoma, and then we moved to England and I didn't.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and that's when things really started to pick up in the cake world. I think that was sort of like one of the first cake specials that Food Network took a chance on.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got really popular. Cause like after I went to that first show in 2004, the next year I came back, it fully exploded.
Yeah.
Like the number of entries probably at the show doubled or tripled because they had to move locations in the expo building because so many more people entered because it had been featured on the Food Network. And then by that point, the Food Network Challenge was in full swing. And then they really started investing in these cake shows And then it just, like you said, it kind of exploded. And then all of a sudden you could get these products that you never could before.
Right.
That made your life so much easier to do cake decorating.
Yeah. And the people who came out of it, you know, I mean, Mike McCary, just, you see this guy and he's just, he waves his hands and magic comes out on TV. And you're like, oh my God, now that's Scooby-Doo. What? And then, you know, because that's how I learned modeling chocolate, was him showing up to Austin and doing modeling chocolate, and he told me, yeah, I had to.
I had no, he's the reason I even learned what modeling chocolate was.
Right, yeah, I mean.
He was the only person using it,
yeah,
at that time that I knew of.
Yeah, I mean, when I can't think of anyone I knew using it before. I mean, someone must have, he must have learned it somewhere.
Yeah.
But yeah, when he started using it, I remember that first Austin show where he came, and because I was fangirling for him, and then Lauren Kitchens was fangirling for him, and I was also fangirling for Lauren Kitchens, and it was like just, and Mike McCary is like, why are you all doing this? I'm just a guy. And we're like, no, you're the cake god, which he doesn't like, which is why I say it. But like, I mean, now he's my friend, and like, it's really cool. But at the time, like, he just comes in and he does this magic. And I remember that first demo that I went to. It was the only time I actually did a class or demo at Austin. I had someone else cover the kids' table for me because I was going to watch Mike McCary's thing. And he, when he demonstrated that he could take the modeling chocolate, warm it up, make it all flexible, and then, like, in the relative, you know, air-conditioned coolness of the venue, a minute later, stand it up on its edge.
Right.
We were all like, oh, that's amazing.
I know.
And now, I mean... Yeah, there's times I do modeling chocolate and there's times I do fondant, and like when you want one, the other won't do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like that's the thing is now there's just more and more people getting involved. There's amazing new products and like all these like hybrid things that I'm like, oh, this is not quite this. It's not quite this. It's something different, something new. And kind of what I've loved is like when I went to Oklahoma, because I had no really like bare bones basic cake supplies as a teenager. Like I wasn't investing in cake supplies, but what was great about Oklahoma is that they didn't really have like a raffle like most cake shows do. Oklahoma was sort of an interesting show in the sense that it was sort of an island, its own separate island in the sea of cake shows.
Right.
Because it was associated with a state fair. So they didn't really have to do like as much. Kerry Vincent, I'm sure, did a whole lot of fundraising for that show with the amount of prizes that she was able to obtain. But so they didn't really do a raffle. What their raffle was is like, it was all based, you didn't buy tickets. It was all based on if you entered X amount of entries, each entry got a raffle ticket. So then you put your name on the back of all your tickets, and then before the award ceremony, they would draw all the tickets that were associated to each prize package, and then you would just show up and collect all your swag before the award ceremony even happened.
Oh my God.
And so me, the second year I entered, I entered those entries. So I like won all this stuff. And so I was like, yay. So that's basically how I like started my whole collection of cake supplies that I didn't really even have to pay for, and started getting things, trying new things that I wouldn't have normally worked with because I had no access to them at the time. And now I have this like giant wall full of like tubs and tubs of cake supplies that I have won over the years that I don't know what I'm going to do with them, but I'm just still holding on to them.
Well, they're yours.
Cutters and molds. I'm like, oh, those are pretty. I wouldn't use them for a cake competition because it gets you more points to do things by hand, but exactly. I'm still going to hold on to them.
Well, okay. So if you ever hit a point where, I mean, obviously you can do the singing and dancing forever, but you know, if the acrobatics and stuff is starting to hurt, and you're doing less performing, would you consider opening a cake business, or do you just have no interest in clients? Because I can totally see not having an interest in clients.
Yeah, at this point it's my hobby, so it's sort of my escapism from my job. So I worry that the moment I take it on as a job, you know, it'll suck all the fun out of it a little bit.
Yep.
So I don't think I really want to. I couldn't maybe make, you know, just for like close friends and relatives, but I would never really want to own like a business front or anything where I'm making cakes. But you know, it is something I might like, I would consider doing as like maybe like a part-time thing, and an established bakery to work as a cake decorator to see if I like it. But one thing I would like to do is actually try to get into teaching, maybe.
Right.
I've never taken a class before, but, you know, people have been, within the last couple of years, especially since I've been very successful at all these cake shows, they're like, so when are you going to teach a class? And I'm like, I don't know. It's funny because I still kind of think of myself as this rookie in a way. So I don't think, well, do I even have a technique that people would want to learn? So I'm still like pondering it at this moment, but it would be something I'd be interested in eventually pursuing in teaching a class.
You teach it on one of those cake cruises.
Yeah. I'm already, you know, well-versed on the sea, so I might as well do a cake cruise, right?
How to decorate a cake in your postage stamp of a cabin.
One fun thing that I tried to see if I could do while I was on the cruise ship with Disney is I actually did get to talk to my managers to be like, so, you know, I do cakes. And they're like, oh, sure, sure. And I'm like, well, here's pictures of my stuff. And they're like, oh, my gosh. When you said you did cakes, we weren't expecting this. So I was like, yeah. So I'm like, I'm really itching to use an oven. Because when you're on the cruise ship, I don't have access to an oven.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
Because, you know, like we have, you know, it's a cruise ship. So obviously there are pastry chefs on board who are making desserts for thousands of guests that are on board the ship.
Right.
But you know, me being a performer, I don't have access to those areas of the ship. So I went to my leader. So it's like, is there any possible way that they would be okay with me maybe, you know, getting in the kitchen and helping them out in some way? And so I actually got to talk to the head pastry chef of Disney Cruise Line, and they're like, oh yeah, you know, you could get you a job at the resorts easily. I was like,
well, that's cool.
Well, I'll put that in the back of my mind eventually. But and eventually they actually didn't want me to like make a display for them, like during the holiday season, that they were going to like put on display for all the guests. But unfortunately, there's a lot of red tape because I wasn't like technically I would have to go through a bunch of training and food certification they would even allow me in the kitchen. So it unfortunately didn't work out, but yeah. You know, that I always thought would have been a fun thing to do, is to, you know, go to Disney Resort and like make all the fun like little Christmas displays that they'll have.
Although I'm kind of picturing like this cruise line, and I'm picturing like a giant kitchen and a bunch of pastry chefs, and they've got their production line doing of, you know, the 2000 identical desserts. And what I'm picturing is, amongst all the, you know, stainless steel counters and fridge and stuff, is you doing backflips behind them.
You probably wouldn't have been too far off. That's probably exactly what it would have been.
And those guys would have been like, what? Like, why are one of the performers in here backflipping their way through? But then at the end, see, okay, now this is my new TV show. This is starring you, and you backflip your way past all these guys who give you all the dirtiest looks. But then when you get to the end, you like grab a piping bag and you twirl the cake on its turntable, and then you go with some wilding chocolate, and there's a cat on the top of it, and then you just stride out the other door, and they're like all drop jawed, like what?
Yeah,
that's
in a perfect world with a little bit of magic, a little bit of Disney magic.
Oh, see, Disney. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the unexpected guy who just comes in and makes the magic twinkling out of your hands. Yeah. Yeah, it's because it's close to midnight, so I'm getting a bit punch drunk, and I've now cast you in this magical Disney show in my head. You had to sing as you backflip too, so.
When we get a producer involved, just call me up. I'll be there.
I think this one's gonna make, you know, bazillion dollars for sure.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, it's gonna be, you know, bigger than any other. Yeah, no. But okay, so what you've got coming up next is Show Me Sweets, and we can't talk about it too much because this will air before that, so we can't talk about what you're making or whether or not you've even tried for the show or anything.
All I'll say is I've got my concept, but like I said, I should have started on it yesterday.
That is always the way. And even if you do start on it, like, if we finish this call and you start on it now, you will still be doing it the night before.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, that's the thing. It's like, all the time with competitions, it's like, no matter how much time I say, okay, I'm going to give myself, I'll just like work on a little bit here, and then I'll procrastinate. I'll work on a little bit there, and then procrastinate. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, it gets to be like the week before the show, and like, why is there so much left to do?
That's right.
You had all this time.
Yeah. I tend to mire myself too early, because I get that stage fright fear of the doing the hard part, the face, or the important bit. So I kind of like come at it all these ways, you know, I'm decorating the board, or I'm doing the background, or, you know, the other elements that are important for a competition piece, but they're not the focus. And so then all of a sudden it's like, oh crap, now I have a week left and I have to do the actual main piece. But wow, right. What an amazing tiled board I've made.
Yeah, I've done all these details, but yeah. Now, like, where's the actual piece?
Yeah, I've made 1,100 bricks by hand, you know, but now I need to actually do all the figures. Yeah.
Right.
It's a form of procrastinating while still getting things done, which is really dangerous.
Yeah, I know. I actually, my biggest problem is that I just get distracted easily. I'll be like, oh, what's happening on YouTube or Facebook? And like, I really just can't trust myself with those things. So I really need to get to work. And because especially since with this show, I know they are reaching out to as many people as they can to be involved with it.
Yep.
They really want to make it something big, and they're reaching out to, you know, other cake artists and gingerbread people. Ooh, the gingerbread people are scary. Like, the stuff that they do is like, I don't know how they do it. So
yeah, I know some people who are going, and I'm not gonna say, but lots of people have been showing me secret things, and I'm like, oh, that's really great. And some of you are in the same category, so like I can't. yeah, it's really nice, like, how many people show me their cool stuff, and I get all squeeful, but, like, I have to keep secrets for, like, 5 people at a time, at least.
Right.
And particularly for Austin, especially now that people know I'm not coming. Everyone wants to show me their piece, and it's really great.
But you're still so involved, too, so, like, it's like, well, we can ask Kim all these questions, and she'll be able to tell us. But therefore, you know everything that goes on.
Yeah, well, if it's a question about a part of the rules I wrote, I will just answer you. And if it's a question that we haven't actually addressed, because that comes up, I'm still throwing it to Kyla. The difference is, if you come to me first, we're not all piling on Kyla. Mm-hmm. So I can sort of be Kyla's fence a little bit, because it gets a little bit exhausting. And that's why I'm one of the managers of, you know, the Facebook page. I don't even look at it this time of the year. I figured Kyla and Tian are dealing with it. But we actually talked about that for the 2020 show, that maybe what I should be doing is being the, you know, for British hours, be the live, you know, Facebook and Twitter bot. Like, I will be the bot.
Sure.
And answer the question, because it doesn't matter how many times you say X in the rules, we get 1,000 questions of X.
Right. Yeah. I know. I understand.
Yeah. So I might be the bot for that.
But, you know, like, I also think, too, it's like, if you are, you know, always read the rules, first and foremost.
Yeah.
Like, it's just 101, read your rules.
And then again.
If you have questions or you just don't understand, ask away. Like, there have been many times for competitions where I'm just like, I want to do this. Is this going to be I don't actually say what I'm doing. Also, don't give yourself away.
Right.
but, you know, like, you know, if there's something you're questioning, if the rules are going to allow it or not, you know, don't hesitate to bring it up, because you don't want to make a mistake. Some shows are very generous and they won't penalize you hard, but some shows will just straight up disqualify you. So
yep.
you gotta be very careful. If there's ever any doubt, always make sure you ask questions. And that also, another thing I always like to do is I always like to, if there's the slightest bit doubt that I feel that the judges might question how I made something, I will include in progress pictures.
Yep.
Even if it's not a requirement of that specific category, usually it's always a requirement if you're doing like a sculpted cake. But, you know, like for my cookie car, I knew it was important for me to include in progress pictures. For the cat and the cupcakes, the yarn ball cupcakes, I had the yarn balls were, you couldn't really see the cupcakes because they were inside. Like, you have to lift the lids in order to see that there were cupcakes inside. So I made sure I included a picture with all the cupcakes visible so that the judges knew that there were cupcakes inside each of them.
Yeah, because Austin judges won't lift a thing. I mean, that was, it took me years fighting to get a clause in the rules to say judges at their discretion may interact with the cake. I had I had to work to get that because I wanted to do things where judges could turn the handle or flip the switch or bend the thing. Just, because British judges, they will poke your piece and rip it apart. Like, they have no qualms about it. But in the American show judges, they don't want to touch it. So that was new for Austin this year. So that if you had put in your documents, please open it. Again, we had to say at their discretion, but then they could have opened it. But before this year, they would not have.
Yeah.
So,
well, and the thing was, too, is like, I knew I could, especially with me not being the one traveling with that.
Right.
I knew I had to glue all the lids shut. I had to use royal icing and just glue them shut so that they wouldn't fall off during travel. But then it wouldn't make it possible for the judges to just take the lids off. So then I was like, well, I got to make sure that they know that there are six cupcakes on this display. So I made sure I included a picture that showed all the cupcakes visible. So, you know, I do think that that's very important as a competitor. If there's ever any doubt, make sure you ask the questions. And if you're worried that the judges might not understand something, give as much information as you possibly can.
Because they can always ignore it.
The judges can decide to read as much as they want or as little as they want of it. But, you know, at least it's there if they do have questions.
Yeah. And I'm going to explain to our audience, here's how to send a question to any cake show, not just one I'm working with. Ask first in a very, you know, a roundabout way. Say, I have a question about how to do the structure. I have a question if this backdrop is allowed, but without any specifics. Because here's what will happen. If the person answering the email doesn't care what you're making because they anonymity doesn't matter for them, they will then ask, okay, tell me what you want to do, and they will approve it or not. If they can't ask that, they will say, I can't ask you for specifics that might reduce your anonymity, but I will tell you what's allowed or not. And then you can say, okay, that answers my question. Or you can say, oh, I'm still not sure. And then you go back and forth. So that's how the two, because if someone asks for Austin and I'm the one answering, I'm not there judging. Even if I was going, I'm not judging. So it doesn't matter if I know what your entry is. It doesn't matter if Kyla knows what your entry is. Kyla sees my entries when I come to her house, right? Because Kyla's not a judge. What it matters there is that Nick Lodge doesn't see your piece and none of the judges see your piece. So, but at another show,
don't specifically ask the judges.
No, never approach a judge directly.
If this person is judging, do not ask the judge because then you've just shot yourself in the foot.
That's right. Don't.
And then when they see your piece, they'll have to be like, I can't judge this piece because I know who did it.
That's right. You know? Exactly. So, and some shows specifically prohibit that you will be disqualified if you've posted on social media or whatever. So what you do is you go to the show's website or social media, whatever they've got. And I know some shows have one terrible little web page and it's really hard to find the information, but somewhere there should be a contact form or an email address. And what you do is you do your introductory thing is very circumspect and say, I have questions about this. And they will guide you through what they're allowed to know or not. So never be afraid to ask, because the person you're asking, that's all they're doing for 3 weeks before the show is answering questions like that. It's okay. They would rather you ask than be sad.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
I think that's very, very wise advice.
Yes. And I mean, like, again, as one of the people who answer those questions, say about 80% of the time, all I'm doing is going right over to the rules and copying and pasting the exact answer right back to them. But fine. Okay. Yeah. We'll do that rather than have someone break a rule.
Exactly.
Yeah. Because we don't want sad people.
Like, you know, I read the rules backwards and forwards, and there's sometimes that I'm just like, well, I'm trying to do something really specific and the rule is just not quite specific enough. So I just want to make sure I cover my bases, you know?
Well, and any show that prizes artistry and innovation can't possibly write the rules for every scenario, because then there's no room for artistry and innovation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there is value in a show saying, we want six identical cupcakes in a spring floral theme. That is extremely specific, and they might even give you a list of plants you're allowed to use. And that is fine, because what they're doing there is testing a technique.
Right.
But there's, you know, the Austin show will almost never have a category like that, because it's more of an open show. So instead, what we do is make a cake. The rules are it has to have this many tiers, and or it can't have, like, buttercream only has to be buttercream only. But if you want to make buttercream only do weird stuff, which I've done, then do that. And, like, we did this new thing this past year where we had these I came up with this idea of doing judging advice sheets. So we have the basic rule that says it has to be this many tiers or whatever. But then we as a show want to direct judges for what our show, the flavor of our show is. But we also want the public to know kind of what we're telling judges. So we came up with these judging advice sheets, and they were available publicly, sort of as an addendum to the rules. And it said things like, for wedding cakes, we said, because it's, I've don't do wedding cakes, and I've seen wedding cakes judged harshly because they weren't white on white, because they had too much color. And yeah. The phrase judges will write is, no bride would want this. And so what we specifically told judges in Austin is, Austin brides might want that. The city's motto is, keep Austin weird. If you are thinking no bride wants this, remember, an Austin bride might. And we put that specifically in that advice sheet, and then made that available to both sides, judges and competitors, hopefully to empower the competitors to do a weird cake, and judges to see that the weird cake is allowed and part of the show.
I love that.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, I'm not much of a wedding cake person myself either, and I have to really, like, be motivated to do a wedding cake in a theme that inspires me. So, like, I like that aspect of it. I like that you are allowed to try to think out, and that's what competitions are all about. It's getting you to think outside of your box and to push yourself into a level that you never thought you could before.
Yeah. And if you want to come to Austin with a white-on-white traditional wedding cake, that it's not like that's not allowed. We certainly don't want to say everything has to be weird. What we want to say is every style is allowed and will be judged on its own merits. And we're not going to say this one gets fewer points because it's in neon colors and this one or this one is too traditional. None of that. I don't want to see any of that at Austin ever. I want it judged on its own merits. And so we write our rules towards that. Other shows are testing you on your traditional skills, which is also valid. And I'm sure there are shows out there that are all about just wild artistry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so.
But, like, that's why they all try to put those, like I said, there's a set list of judging criteria to try to make it as objective as possible.
Yeah.
That hopefully that subjectivity doesn't really hinder people from placing where they should when their craftsmanship is well done and stuff, you know?
Yeah. Having spoken with Julia about the Show Me Sweets thing and the stuff that she's doing there, she doesn't want to see her own cookies reflected back at her.
Oh, yes. I heard that, too, that she was just like, you know, it actually, you know, if I'm seeing my techniques and basically just a replication of what I've done, that's not really going to get you more points. And in fact, that's thinking less outside of the box.
Right. I mean, Julia Asher has a particular style. And if you're doing a Julia-style cookie, that's fine. But at a competition like that, it's got to be your own design. Like
Exactly. But. And Julia Asher is fabulous. She has a wide array of videos and that are very helpful in teaching you techniques you can use.
Yes.
But yes, I think it's very important that, you know, the design should still be from you and should still mean a lot to you.
Yes. But anyway, so that's your next show coming up. And then are you going back to or do you not even know where you're going next for cruises or whatever?
Right now I'm a free bird. So right now it's just focusing on the Show Me Sweet show, and you know, every time a new cake show is coming out, I'm like, what can I make? Even though I think it's about time that I maybe just, like, slow down a little bit, because, like I said, it's taking over all of my free time
right
at this point. But so right now it's just focusing on Show Me Sweets, and then I'll see where the rest of the year takes me.
Well, that sounds super exciting. I can't wait to see what you make for Show Me Sweets, but obviously I can't. I have to wait like everybody else. But given that it's after midnight here, I should probably wrap this up.
Yeah, and I'll let you get to sleep.
Yes. And wish you the best of luck with that. And if you happen to end up on that TV show, I don't know if I can see that TV show when and if it comes out, but I will definitely be watching because I know a few people who have put in for that. I'm very...
We shall see what happens.
Yeah, I'm hopeful to see which amongst my friends get to be on that. I think that's really cool. So best of luck with that and really get started tomorrow because you need to.
Really
no pressure.
Appreciate it. Thanks.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being on. It's been great having you on. And just, I mean, it just worked out so beautifully that we'd been planning this for like a year and then, oh, you just won SoFlo. Yay!
Yeah, I know. That worked out nicely, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm glad we planned that way. That was excellent. Well done.
Well, thank you so much, Kim. I really appreciate it. It was a lot of fun.
All right.
And if you want to find me on social media, my handles are Thomas Blake's Cakes.
Yeah, and we'll put in the show notes links to all your gorgeous pictures and all your social media stuff. And hopefully people will follow and watch you flipping and making gorgeous art.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
All right. Well, thanks so much.
All right. You have a good one.
You too. Talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye.
This has been the Eat the Evidence podcast. A warm thanks to all of my contributors, and you can find out more about them and the things discussed on today's episode in the show notes by visiting the podcast section of the Eat the Evidence website, eat-the-evidence.com/podcast. There, you'll find social media links as well as links to iTunes, Stitcher, and other places where you can subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. I've also posted detailed instructions on how to leave me a Facebook voicemail message and other options to call into the show. Please do feel free at any time to call in your very own cake formation, funny story, talk about a challenge you're having or have recently overcome, or rant about something driving you crazy. And if you like the show, please post a review on iTunes and share it with all of your sugar artist friends. This show was produced and edited by me, Kimberly Chapman. Thank you so much for listening, and remember, you are an amazing artist, and everyone involved with this podcast supports you. You can do it! Until next time, bye-bye, and good luck with whatever you're working on.
Covered the first of four tiers with Blue Royal fondant.
Chocolate.
The paste-like icing can be molded or rolled and is a popular trend in wedding cakes.